A Juneau grand jury has indicted a Juneau man for murder in the second degree in connection with the death of 19-year-old Gabriel Cart. 25-year-old Ryan West has been lodged at Lemon Creek Correctional Center on no bail. Cart was killed in a car accident June 6th at mile 35 Glacier Highway. When Juneau police officers arrived at the scene that night, they found a 1994 green Dodge pickup truck with extensive damage to the undercarriage, roof, and passenger side. Police said both West and Cart were in the vehicle when it lost traction on the road and drove into the ditch, rolling over several times. Cart had been ejected from the vehicle and was dead at the scene. West was transported to Bartlett Regional Hospital with minor injuries and later released. Police said alcohol and excessive speed were factors in the crash. Murder in the second degree is an unclassified felony. If West is convicted, the maximum sentence would be 99 years in prison and a fine of up to $500,000. Rochelle Waterman will not be reporting to jail on Friday to begin serving a prison sentence. Earlier this year, the Craig woman was convicted of criminally negligent homicide in the death of her mother, but her attorney Stephen Wells says a state superior court judge granted Waterman's request earlier this month to remain free on bond pending an appeal. Waterman was a teenager in 2004 when she was accused of conspiring to kill her mother, Lori Waterman. A 2006 trial ended in a hung jury. She was retried this year and acquitted of conspiracy to commit murder and first-degree murder, but convicted of criminally negligent homicide and sentenced to 3 years in prison. She was to receive credit for time served. Two of her former boyfriends are serving long prison sentences for their roles in Lori Waterman's death. An Alaska woman convicted of punishing her adopted Russian son by squirting hot sauce in his mouth has been spared jail time. 36-year-old Jessica Beagley yesterday was given 3 years probation, a 180-day suspended jail sentence, and a $2,500 fine, also suspended. She was convicted last week of misdemeanor child abuse. Prosecutors say she used videotape of herself punishing the 7-year-old boy as a ploy to get on the Dr. Phil TV show. Beagley submitted the 8-minute tape for a show segment titled Mommy Confessions. On the video, she squirts hot sauce into the boy's mouth and puts him in a cold shower for lying about getting into trouble at school. Beagley had faced a maximum sentence of 1 year in jail and a $10,000 fine. The practice of intensive management or lethal predator control of bears and wolves is mandated by a 1994 law adopted by the Alaska legislature. But an article in the August issue of the Journal of Wildlife Management argues the state isn't doing the research necessary to know if it's causing long-term, perhaps even permanent damage to the state's grizzly bear population. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes has more.
John Shane is co-author of Trends in Intensive Management of Alaska's Grizzly Bears from 1980 to 2010. He's a retired biologist who used his Ph.D. in wildlife ecology to work for 20 years at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, then at the Audubon Society, and as a University of Alaska associate professor. He says one of the problems with the state's intensive management regime is it restricts game managers. For instance, he says caribou or moose numbers may drop due to overharvesting, habitat destruction, or a hard winter. But in the parts of the state where the intensive management program applies, he says managers have few options.
Wildlife management at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, for example, might want to reduce the bag limits, or they might want to reduce the hunting season, but they can't unless they exert predator control.
The state has set goals for moose and caribou populations that many scientists say are unrealistically high. Shane says the state has set grizzly bear population goals too low. For instance, he says the state's goal for the bear population in a game management unit near Glen Allen is only 30% of the number of bears that were there years ago.
The population goal for that area, which has had liberalized hunting regulations, is to have 350 bears. Based on past population estimates where there was a lot of work and money spent doing population estimates, 350 would be a 70% decline from what they once knew the population was estimated at.
Shane says grizzly bears in interior Alaska are at risk in part due to their slow rate of reproduction. He says deer, moose, and caribou have one or two offspring every year starting at age 2 or 3, but grizzlies only have young every third year starting at age 6 or 7.
Brown grizzly bears, same species, refer to grizzly bears as the northern interior populations and brown bear as the coastal populations. They have one of the lowest reproductive rates of any land mammal in North America.
Shane says the state is operating under the assumption that fewer grizzly bears means more moose and caribou, even though scientific study results are mixed. Plus, Shane says the state doesn't know enough about the effects intensive management is having on the grizzly bear population in interior Alaska.
The amount of research declined. So we know that harvest increased. We don't know what the effect that has had on population size.
State Division of Wildlife Conservation Director Corey Rossi says the department can't pinpoint population counts within 1 or 2 percentage points, but can track trends and is working to improve.
Specifically, we're spending time and money trying to learn how to better assess populations, and there is some population work going on, of course. With bears in general. Some of the work has been lumped with multiple species, black and grizzly bears, as well as wolves together in some of these predator control areas.
Rossi says it's important to remember that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game manages for multiple uses, and usually, he says, there are enough bears for multiple uses. However, Rossi says any time you legislate wildlife management, there is a risk of some issues in implementation.
Now, could some wording be changed a little bit to maybe clear up or clarify a few things? That's probably not a bad idea, but that's really the legislature's prerogative and the people's prerogative to go to their legislators with that. But as far as the act itself, the statute itself, I don't really have a problem with it.
In 1997, then-Governor Tony Knowles asked the National Research Council to take a look at predator control in Alaska. The council recommended the state undertake a rigorous scientific research and monitoring program. Rossi says that's his goal, too.
We are going to continue to strive for the best research program that we can, that we can afford and that we can assemble in terms of a team. And we intend to use that research to inform the process as we make our management decisions.
The Department of Fish and Game has gone to court against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Fish and Wildlife blocked a state decision to begin predator control in a wildlife refuge in Alaska, saying it's contrary to the purpose of the refuge. Last year, the National Park Service banned certain hunting practices in a handful of parks and preserves, including Yukon Charlie, where the agency says predator control contributed to a 46% decline in wolf numbers in less than a year. The state says wildlife management is a state's right and these federal actions are a challenge to its sovereignty. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The price of benchmark crude oil for October is $87.60 a barrel this morning. And the price of gold is up more than $37 in early spot market trading to $1,833 an ounce. Silver also up to about 50 cents to $41.74 an ounce. You're listening to Morning Edition on KTOO. The location of the Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial has been laid to rest by the Juneau Assembly. The panel last night determined the memorial should stay where it is on Juneau's working waterfront, even though a floating cruise ship berth will be built in front of it in the next couple years. The memorial board had asked that the granite wall with names of deceased fishermen be moved to Marine Park. The board says the annual blessing of the fleet just won't be the same because the boats that queue up won't be able to get close enough to shore. The question has gone before the Docks and Harbors Board and the city's Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee. While they recommended the memorial stay where it is, they said Marine Park should be an option since it's going to be redesigned. The assembly was to make the final decision. Mayor Bruce Botello made it clear a decision needs to be made.
I think it's important that we bring some finality to this.
Port engineer Gary Gillette says fishing vessels will be able to pass in front of the memorial at its current location. He says he told the assembly the closest they can get now is 75 to 80 feet during the ceremony. Though the actual cost of a move isn't known, the city has set aside $2 million for the relocation. Botello says that money can be better spent.
There are going to be ways of celebrating, even with the new configuration, where this issue 20, 30, 40 years from now will just not seem like that's a big deal. That there are ways of truly being able to integrate the memorial with the new waterfront.
Deputy Mayor Merrill Sanford argued the assembly shouldn't go against the memorial board's wishes.
Right now, the memorial committee itself has delved into this in great depth, and this is their preferred site if we're building 16B. So I would have to vote no against this proposal.
The assembly last year approved construction of the floating berth system called Concept 16B. The Docks and Harbors Department identified several sites for relocating the memorial, as well as the no-move option. The memorial board dismissed all but Marine Park, mainly based on the needs of the annual ceremony. On a vote of 6-3, the assembly said the Fisherman's Memorial will stay where it is. Those voting for the motion were Mayor Botello, Mary Becker, Karen Crane, Johan Dibdahl, Malcolm Menzies, and David Stone. Sanford, Ruth Danner, and Peter Freer voted against it. The assembly last night introduced an ordinance to repeal a recent rezoning of a property at the corner of Atlin Drive and Mendenhall Loop Road. City Attorney John Hartle is convinced the rezone is illegal. He says he received a letter from an attorney for property owner Richard Harris arguing it should be allowed to stand, but Hartle says the best thing for the assembly to do is overturn it and start the process again. The ordinance will come up for a second reading and public hearing at the assembly's next meeting. Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 200 held an informational picket at Marine Park yesterday while the cruise ship Westerdam was anchored in Gastineau Channel. Union members say the cruise lines have repeatedly broken the law by not calling a contract stevedoring company to perform dock work, such as tying up tender boats and loading cargo when vessels are anchored offshore. Tenders are used to ferry passengers to and from shore and to load cargo when cruise ships anchor in port rather than tying up to a dock. Dennis Young is president of ILWU Local 200 Unit 16 in Juneau. He says the cruise lines have been using crew members from the ships, some of whom aren't U.S. citizens, to perform the longshore work. Young says the union is working with U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Alaska's congressional delegation to end the practice.
They can continue to stall, spit and sputter, but we will be taking this as far as we have to protect our U.S. longshore workers' rights.
Alaska Cruise Association President John Binkley says the cruise lines are complying with federal law by using U.S. citizens to perform the work.
Well, I'm certainly not an attorney, but I don't know of any federal law that requires you to use a specific union to do work.
Binkley says the longshoremen don't have a right to the work under their contract.
My understanding is that through the collective bargaining process, they've agreed not to do the work on the tenders and smaller vessels, and that was bargained away for other wages or benefits over the years. And now I think they want to go outside the collective bargaining system to try and take over that work.
Young says that's simply not true.
They're picking and choosing how to follow the contract when they hire a stevedoring company to perform U.S. longshore work, and they're picking and choosing how they're going to follow the Immigration Act law.
The longshoremen plan a similar protest in Sitka today and Ketchikan at some point. They were joined in Juneau by Bartlett Regional Hospital nurses, who are also represented by the ILWU, as well as members of other unions, including state employee unions and the Inland Boatmen's Union. The captain of the Westerdam notified passengers of the protest by letter. Most ignored the picketers, who didn't actively try to engage the tourists. Governor Sean Parnell says his administration will review every federal reduction to see how the state should respond. Speaking to the Conservative Political Action Conference yesterday in Juneau on the cruise ship Westerdam, Parnell said the state will take a close look at whether it should pick up the slack by funding programs targeted for federal budget cuts. He said in the past, the automatic assumption has been to use its funds to cover any funding gaps. Parnell said the state needs to ask itself whether it's worth putting its own money toward certain programs if the federal government doesn't deem them worth funding. Other speakers addressing the CPAC week-long cruise include former U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, Ralph Reed of the Christian Coalition, and Americans for Tax Reform President Grover Norquist. Parnell signed Norquist's taxpayer protection pledge opposing any and all tax increases. The cruise is sponsored in part by the Tea Party. Meanwhile, former U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller will be in Juneau today to promote his Restoring Liberty Alaska Political Action Committee. Miller will appear with conservative activist and Willie Horton attack ad creator Floyd Brown and Jerome Corsi, a political commentator known for questioning President Obama's citizenship. The three will be at Nugget Mall tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. Gardenberg will be the first year-round Jewish rabbi in Juneau.
In Hebrew, it's pronounced Dov. If anyone read the book Exodus, it's one of the main characters. But Dov means bear. And moving up here, I'm in my natural habitat.
Though Dov was a practicing rabbi before he arrived in Juneau, he didn't move here intending to do that here. His wife had taken a position at Bartlett Hospital, but the Jewish community, which has only had temporary rabbis before, convinced him to sign on with year-round status.
The word rabbi means teacher in Hebrew. A rabbi is someone who teaches Torah. It literally means instruction, but is the Jewish scriptural tradition, which is different than the Christian tradition. We share with the Christian tradition the Bible, at least the Hebrew Bible, but we also have what we call rabbinic literature. We are interpreters of that tradition to the Jewish community and to the broader world, whether rabbis in Juneau or in Jerusalem.
Services and classes offered at the Jewish synagogue are open to the public, and Dov has no plans to implement a complete overhaul of the Jewish community practices. For more information on local Jewish community activities, you can visit the synagogue's Facebook page. Just log on to Facebook and look up Congregation Sukkot Shalom. Sukkatshalom. Taking a look at weather for the Juneau area today, mostly cloudy with areas of fog this morning, a few isolated showers in the afternoon, light and variable winds becoming northwest 10 to 15 miles per hour, highs around 59, lows tonight around 46, with areas of fog and isolated showers late. You're listening to Morning Edition on KTOO Juneau.